Hey, this is Anna.
And this is Shireen.
And this is Ethnically Ambiguous.
Episode 41.
We are going to cover for the majority of the episode the Gaza Strip protests.
Yes, so stay tuned.
Yep.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi.
Hi.
This is us.
This is me.
This is episode 41.
41, you guys. 41. We've hit the 40s. We've surpassed the 40. We're in 41. Wow.
Whoa, 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 wee, whoa.
What a ride. What a ride. Yeah, we're back. How was your week, Anna?
It was good.
You seem suspicious of that question.
What are you asking me here? It was good. I had a good time. We had good times. Everyone's good.
Good. Yeah. I went to San Diego to see my mommy and daddy.
I saw you were posting cat pics.
Yeah.
Or cat snaps.
My mom and dad. Yeah, they're still Mama and Baba on my phone. They will never change.
Well, my parents are their first and last names, and I take them very seriously.
No, my mom is going. She flew out to West Virginia today, actually, because my grandparents are over there, and she wants to spend time with her mom for Mother's Day.
Nice.
Until, yeah.
I asked my mom when she was going to Iran next, and she was like, I don't know, 2 years?
My mom literally, she took a giant suitcase that she checked in. It was just filled with dates, coffee.
Vitamins?
Coffee cups, like those little tiny Turkish ones. Oh. Like sets of them, because they need more, apparently. And what else did she bring?
Any vitamins?
I think she brought a few vitamins,
My parents love bringing vitamins to their old family members.
Vitamins. Yeah, I think they definitely stock up on vitamins, eye drops for my grandfather. But it was so heavy. Like,
well, what people don't know is West Virginia lacks stores.
Well, apparently they do. Go to. Apparently they do lack Arabic stores.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah.
West Virginia seems so racist.
Yeah.
Sorry to all our West Virginia
listeners. I mean, a lot of my family's over there now, so it's kind of strange.
History has told me.
Did not think I would ever have family over there, but now I do.
That's good.
Thanks, Bashar.
Thanks, Bashar.
Yeah.
My dad's in Iran doing his Iran thing. He was supposed to go to Baku, Azerbaijan, with his friend, but he chose not to because he's lazy and old.
Oh, word.
Yeah, he was like, no, I don't want to go.
Okay, that settles that.
Yeah.
That settles that.
He's also apparently just chilling because he's old and bored. My mom says he's very bored. He calls every night to be like, what's up? My mom's like, can you just take a hint and like not call?
It's like, you're supposed to be on vacation.
Yeah. But he's just hanging out.
Yeah.
My dad is also probably, based on my understanding of how my father treats all his relatives, he's like the intense Americanized one. So he like goes there and just speaks his mind a little too aggressively.
Right.
And then everyone's just upset the whole time with him.
He's probably isolated himself at this point.
And he's just probably sitting on his iPad.
Yeah.
Like,
just like no one wants to talk to me.
Us. Yeah. He's probably happy no one wants to talk to him. My dad's like a weird old grump where he'll just like be fine.
But he'll make drama to purposely not have people talk to him.
It's not even purposefully. He's just like, when I talked to him before he left, I was like, don't talk shit to every single person you see. And he's like, I'm getting old. I have to just tell them what I think. I can't hold back.
Of
and it's
course.
Like, what?
Of course.
And that's why I am the way I am. I'm a mess. But yeah, he seems like he's doing fine. He did text me, what would you like? And I was like, have some of the women buy me something. Don't have, you shouldn't do it. Because I'm going to end up with like some weird shit. I let my dad buy me things. Yeah. Or just like, my dad, I'll end up with like a hat that's got like camo. And I'd be like, where did you even buy this? And he'd be like, I don't know. And he'd be like, they don't sell this in Iran. And he'd be like, I don't know. It'd just be weird. That's just how things with my father come are so weird.
I don't
like
know.
A bump
so
it.
A lot.
Every yeah. time he bought me a bump it.
No.
It was just like, you would like this. And I was like, I don't even know where you would get a bump it. And he was like, I don't know. And that was it. I was just like, thanks. And I threw it
Someone
in my trunk.
Someone was like, girls like this thing. And he's like, I have a girl.
I just feel like someone gave it to him, and he was like, oh, yeah, Anna bumps
has hair.
Her hair, which I
Anna
don't.
Anna has hair, yeah.
When in my life have I ever put a bump it in, except for the one time I got it, put it on jokingly, laughed for 20 minutes, and then took it off, and I don't know where it is.
I don't think I've ever used one, but
that's normal.
Yeah.
Why would you use a
no,
bump
you
it?
Should never use a bump it.
Oh
my
guys.
God, R.E.P. bump it's rip.
Whoever, if you ever used the bump it, seriously, please tweet at us. I'm so curious.
What a time that the 90s.
Bumpets.
Yeah. Bumpets.
You guys.
But yeah, I miss my mom already. It was nice seeing my parents for a few days. It was nice. My mom really, she loves the cat at my parents' house. It's technically my little sister's cat, but it lives at my parents' house, right. So I feel like it's my mom's cat at this point. But she just worries about the cat constantly. She's going to miss it so much, she says.
Interesting.
This cutest little cat. Little tabby.
Is she going to be there for Mother's Day?
Yeah, she wants to be with her mom for Mother's Day.
That's nice.
Yeah. She's going to take care of them and stay at their house in West Virginia. It's crazy. They have, like, a very, like, a well-sized house because it's West Virginia. They could afford it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's for, like, $30.
Yeah. My uncle lives there. My uncle's wife lives there. Her kids live there.
They have just, like, a little commune they got for, like, yeah, $50.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Dude, housing markets, dude.
Yeah.
Nobody...
They have a nice little, like, sun, like an atrium kind of thing. Like, it's not, like, a technically outside, but it's, like, a garden thing that it's, like...
They're probably
it's
in,
the
like,
perfect room for smoking and yeah. drinking coffee and tea.
They're like, we'll throw that in for $1.
Yeah, exactly. So...
I'm exaggerating yeah. how bad the housing market is there. Please don't at me.
I really wanted... I told my mom I wanted to go with her so I can, like, film my grandparents, but she was not into that idea.
Film them. How so?
I want to like record them like documentary style, like telling stories and stuff to me.
Oh, that'd be cool.
But my mom was like, don't do that. And I was like,
why?
She just, I don't know, she wasn't into that idea.
I like, record.
She was like, if you go by yourself, not with me. And I'm like, the whole reason I wanted to go with you so it would be like a fun little activity for us, but never mind, mom.
why is she so against that, you think?
I think it's just like, I don't know. She would rather me just be here and work, she says. She doesn't want me to waste my time. But for me, that is what I want to do. That's like filmmaking for me. It's not work. Yeah, but...
It's content, Mom.
I'll probably go by myself and just... Because my grandparents are getting older. And I told her this. I told her, like, they're getting older and I want to remember exactly all these little stories that they always tell me and the way they speak and everything. I want to immortalize that.
Did you tell your mom that you're a content creator, so you have to go?
Hashtag cry for likes. That's a good hashtag. Yeah, I should tell her that. God, anyone that introduces themselves as a content creator, just don't talk to them.
I'm a creative/contenter.
I did have to go to this like women get together the other day, and you had to put a name tag on and to put what your occupation was. And I was like, I feel like I'm such a multi-hyphenate person. I always put filmmaker because it's just like the most broad term.
Wait, what was this?
It was like a women meetup thing that my friend invited me to.
So they were like, they wanted everyone to be very like open, like so you could be like, hi, Shireen, yeah. producer.
Yeah, exactly.
Hi.
Yeah, but I always put filmmaker because I feel like it's the most broad umbrella term that is just like, I make things. But
Shireen, plastic surgeon. What?
I should have done that. Something absurd like. Taxidermist.
Halliburton employee.
Halliburton?
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
That was a thing I used to do when I was young, high school. I thought it was so fucking funny. I would go to Starbucks and I would just give like absurd names.
Oh yeah, we've all done that. I mean, I never give my real name because I never get it right, so I might as well give them a fake name.
Well, what are your
my go-to fake name is Sally, but that's actually because my mom was going to call me Sally, so it's like there's more to that story. But but yeah, it's usually Sally because they never get that wrong.
Oh, nice.
But what were your funny names?
My big one was Halliburton, the oil
oh,
company.
Oh, Halliburton.
Yeah. I always would be like, it's Halliburton. And then they call out Halliburton. I'd be like, tee.
It makes no sense.
Because I'd be like, okay.
Like, we know it's like your real name.
I'm a shady oil company. I don't know. I don't know why I thought it was so funny.
Did I ever say on the podcast why my mom was going to name me Sally?
Wasn't it because some lady was like, it's an old lady's name. Yeah. It's my name's Sally. Yeah. And your mom was like, ooh.
Exactly. Yeah. No, because my older sister, her name is Raimi, and she's named after a cartoon that my mom really used to like growing up that was dubbed in Arabic. It was about this orphan boy named Raimi looking for his mom. Then there was another anime that was dubbed in Arabic about a Cinderella story, and her name was Sally. So I was going to be named Sally after the other cartoon that she liked because my mom was a giant nerd like me. And then when I was being born in Anaheim, the nurse that had just birthed me brought me to my mom, whoever was handing me to my mom. She was like, oh, what's her name?
The orderly?
Yeah. Like, She was like an older white woman. She was like, oh, what's your baby's name? My mom was like, Sally. And the woman was like, my name is Sally, and it's an old white name, but you should change it right now. She's my like, mom was like, I was like, okay. And then she changed it to Shereen. And now I'm Shereen.
Do you want to hear the story behind my name?
Yeah.
It's real sad. Okay. I was like, why'd you name me Anna?
Yeah.
And my mom was like, I don't know.
Oh.
I was like, what do you mean you don't know? She's like, we just couldn't come up with anything else. I was like, what? Why would you even just lie? Like, just pretend that it means like, something.
I knew. I
and
knew.
She's like, well, it means mother in Turkish. And And I was like, that's it.
That's the my that's birth story.
But like, my mom was just like, I don't know. You know, sometimes names, you know?
But no, my mom, I asked her, like, why she decided to land on Shereen, because it's this Persian name, not Persian, but it's a Persian name. It means sweet. So everyone that I meet that's Persian just assumes I'm Persian, which is fine, because I don't get offended. I don't like Persian people to get offended when they call them Arab.
Okay.
But she said it's just, like, a pretty name that she always heard in Syria and stuff, and, like, there was, like, a store named Shereen, or, like, a singer. There's a singer named Shereen, too, that's from Lebanon or something, I think.
Oh, okay.
So, but, yeah. It's also, my middle name is Sky in Hawaiian, so I don't know where my mom comes up with these things.
It's nice.
Yeah. Lonnie.
My one brother,
Sweet Sky.
Reza, he's named after my grandpa, Reza.
Yeah, yeah. They do grandpas a lot.
Yeah.
They name her grandpas.
So he has a backstory, not me. I'm not bitter.
You're Anna June.
I'm just like, mom's like,
Your name is cool, though, because it's spelled the same name forwards and backwards. It's
palindrome.
Yeah, it's palindrome. That's what I wanted to say.
So is my last name. Just kidding, it's not.
I was going to be like, whoa!
No, could you imagine? My parents are just like, whoops. I do want to touch on a few things before we get into our big topic of the day.
Our big topic is a good one, so stick around for that. But
so there's a few things I want to touch on. One is the Michelle Wolf White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Hilarious.
Oh my God. She fucking killed it.
She's the best. She's funny.
She's a fucking pistol.
Yeah.
I hate all those bitches like Maggie Haberman who are out here like sucking up to the White House so they can get through the fucking door. Fuck off.
Like she hasn't said anything more derogatory to women than fucking the president has. You know what I mean?
Also,
she said perfect smoky eye.
Yeah. Also, my whole point is, why the fuck should we care if she talks about those people in any sort of derogatory manner when that whole administration considers most minorities trash bags?
Yeah.
So I don't know what you want me to care about.
It's
I don't
stupid.
Give a shit if she comments on your appearance, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Fuck you.
Yeah.
You work for an administration that considers all brown people basically rapists, terrorists, freaks from shithole countries. Guess what? Deal with the fucking pain. For once in your life, you be the shithole.
But also, it wasn't even an insult. She said it was a perfect smoky eye.
I don't even care if it was or was not an insult. My whole point is that, like, guess what? Now you get to feel what it's like to be the person who shit on all day, okay?
But deal also, with like, it. The president rips apart women for their physical appearances all the time. Like, Rosie O'Donnell being, like, fat and ugly. And then, like, that Miss America contestant being a Miss Piggy or whatever. He always picks apart women for their physical appearances. But she complimented her makeup skills, so, you know, she should just take
I'm just, I'm very unimpressed by white people, like, being like, dare you.
Also, she did her fucking job. Like, she cares? Was there to roast.
Yeah.
Like, you hired her for a job. She did it extremely well.
You don't get to consider all people who aren't white, like, monsters and, like, gross creatures of the night who are just here to ruin your country and then get offended when one person, like,
does
roasts
her job.
You. Yeah. Like, sorry. Yeah. Sorry she said it to your face, but guess what? You guys don't like anybody that's not looking exactly, that does not look exactly like you, so sorry. Like, I don't care if your feelings are hurt.
She's so
no
funny.
No one needs to be nice to you. You guys are nice to nobody.
Yeah. Definitely watch it if you haven't. It's like 20 minutes. It's a good watch, a good laugh. But a lot of her comedy is also kind of like crude in a good way. So I feel like when they hired her, they should have been expecting her to say the word pussy or like whatever. You know what I mean? Like, they acted so surprised that this person was like doing her job well. So it just kind of.
Yeah, she killed it. And her response was like, whatever.
Yeah, great.
Like, cool, you're upset. Well, cool.
It was annoying, though, that the the people that hired her, the correspondence dinner or whatever, they apologize.
Always do, because they're all like soul suckers. They don't care.
It's just so annoying. I hate that they did that.
My whole point is, don't be all like, I'm a victim here, when you literally want to literally take most of the people out of this country because their skin color is just a tiny bit darker than yours.
Yeah.
So fuck you.
Or they have a different upbringing, or weren't born here, or they have a different
religion. Remember when you did a travel ban? Do you remember that? You literally were like, this type of person who believes this thing is not allowed in this country.
And recently, and Trump doubled down on that. He was like, a Muslim ban. Like, why shouldn't there be a Muslim ban? So it's
and you're so sad that someone called you something from Handmaid's Tale. Like, who cares? White people sometimes.
Yeah.
Who cares? Like, you guys get everything.
Yeah.
Just relax.
Like, let us have this one laugh.
Relax.
Let us have one laugh.
You literally have everything in the world. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
You'll be okay.
You'll be okay.
People will continue to bow down to you. Yeah. It's all good. Literally, it will all, like, literally 2 days later, y'all still in power. It's fine. You are all fine.
Like, she did not disrupt your sense of life at all.
She didn't hurt you. This podcast isn't going to hurt you. Like,
no.
Just relax. Some people, though, they are so stressed. And it's like, people, that's the thing, and when they say, like, saying white people is derogatory, it's like, well, what about when you call people just, like, black people?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same concept.
Like, I'm just trying to put you in a group like you've done to me.
Yeah, like, if I'm grouped, you're grouped.
Yeah.
We'll get on grouper.
But another thing we wanted to shout out was the AV Club gave us a really good, they posted an article a few days ago shouting us out for our We Are Syria episode. And they wrote a really nice statement about, not statement, like a review, I guess, about
blurb.
And it was so cool. And people seemed to really respond good to that episode. So, respond good. Can I speak?
Thank
respond
you for
well.
Responding good.
But yeah, it was so nice. So thanks, AV Club.
Yeah, that was tight.
Yeah,
and then my other Bechdel cast episode got written up as well for She's All That.
Yeah, and it was all up in there. Way to go. Represent,
yeah, that was tight.
Represent.
Again, I want to touch on one more thing before we get into our thing. We all want to talk about this. The Netanyahu evidence that Iran has secret nuclear files.
Yes.
What is with that goddamn set? I posted a meme today on our Instagram.
Yes, please check it out. It's hilarious.
About how he looks like he's on the set of, like, the Eric Andre show. Like, it's just this weird set of,
it's
like,
absurd. Like, 90s-esque, like,
yeah,
weird colors in the background, like
it's like file folders and like discs in like a weird like frame. Like, what are you? Is this your evidence locker?
Yeah, like what audience are you appealing to right now?
I want this set to relay info. Like, no. You look crazy. Also, his secret nuclear files don't prove anything.
Nope, they don't.
Also, the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, I can never say that, who makes sure people are not making nuclear weapons, they don't seem to be interested. They literally rejected Israel's claim. It's like, no. Like, there's no credible evidence, so please stop. You look crazy. Get off this Eric Andre set you're on. Go home. Also, it's too convenient. Like, you're so crazy.
Yeah.
Like, just stop.
I feel like the news coming out of Israel and Russia, especially recently, is always so just like factually wrong. Like, there's no basis in facts anymore. They just put out stuff and it's purely propaganda to get people riled up or on the right side that they think is the right side or whatever. Mm. So just it's infuriating.
It's so silly. All right.
But since we're on Israel, the topic of Israel, we're going to talk about Gaza today.
Yes, we're going to spend the entire episode kind of breaking down what's going on with the Gaza Strip protests.
Yes, and I do want to give a quick shout out to one of our listeners who emailed us reminding us. I mean, like, we've been following the Gaza protests for a while.
On Al Jazeera.
Yeah.
I wish we had, like, a good Al Jazeera drop.
Bam, bam, bam.
Al Jazeera.
Yeah, we can work on that.
Okay.
I like the echoes. Miranda Harwart?
I can't say, but we know you're Palestinian.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But you sent an email about liking the podcast, and you said that you're Palestinian and you're from a very white part of Southern California, and you would just appreciate us touching on what's happening in Gaza and the Great Return and the anniversary of the Nakba. And we're going to get into what that means. So basically, Palestinians, for each Friday starting in the end of March.
March 30th
and going on still now. So for the past month and a half, they have been rushing the border fence between Gaza and Israel in protests. And in response, the Israeli military has ordered soldiers to fire at people's legs if they pose a threat. Again, these are peaceful protests. The majority of the people don't have anything, like no rocks, no, and nothing to arm them. And the demonstrations, which began on March 30th again, they reflect a long simmering demand by Palestinians for the right of return to Israel, while Israel says Palestinians should settle in a future Palestinian state in Gaza and the West Bank. Mm-hmm. And they're known as the Great March of Return. It's set to reach a climax on May 15th, which is the anniversary of...
It's the 7 years since 750,000 Palestinians were expelled from their villages by like Zionist militias in 1948.
Exactly. And 1948 is the year Israel was formed, so that's the... So May 15th, 1948 is the official date that 750,000 people were basically
kicked out
of their home. And now Israel is saying that they have no right to be there.
Right. So, like Shireen was saying, it started on March 30th, which is Land Day, and mm-hmm. it will continue to Nakba anniversary on May 15th. And as of now, 48 Palestinians have been killed, mm-hmm. which I have all their names. I will read later.
Including 4 children and 2 journalists.
And 5,500 have been wounded.
Yep. And demonstrations have attracted as many as 30,000 participants, according to many media reports.
And kind of how these protests are going, like, there are people who are, like, rushing the fences and getting shot at.
Yeah.
So they're making this choice to do this, to be a little bit more aggressive in their protesting. But for the most part, the protesters have makeshift tents that have been, like, about 700 meters away from the Israeli fence, which is symbolizing the right for return of Palestinian refugees, who make about 70% of the Gaza Strip population of 2 million. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more information. And we are back.
We're back.
So a real quick thing. I want to say that the protest is organized by refugees, mm-hmm. doctors, lawyers, university students, Palestinian intellectuals, academics, civil society organizations, and mm-hmm. Palestinian families, which I read that Assad Abu Sharik, who is a spokesperson of the march, told Al Jazeera.
Yeah.
So it's not just like crazy people out there attacking Israel. It's like people,
Palestinian families.
They understand the importance of this time mm-hmm. of the return, Great March of Return movement. And they're here to show their support for their own people.
Yeah. And it was conceived again as nonviolent protests. And we posted about this on our Twitter a few weeks ago. It bears mentioning again, but there's this little boy, just to give you an example of the people that are marching. He's called the Onion Boy. Mm. He got a lot of attention in the media because he made a gas mask out of an onion. He's 9 years old, and he says, my goal is to take back my land, my grandparents' land, and the memories of my family. He's 9 year old Muhammad Aish. And he told Al Jazeera that he was at the front line these deadly protests several Fridays ago. People like him and his father are at these protests, and he made an onion mask because it helps reduce the effect of tear gas on the nerves and helps keep composure. And it would even help you, they say, or his father is saying, to pick up a gas grenade and throw it back at the soldiers. So you should go. I'll keep the link in the footnotes, but we also posted about it on our Twitter. He's amazing. He's my hero. And he says that he's ready for fresh protests leading up to the 70th anniversary on May 15th.
Yes.
So people like that are the ones that are protesting and going out there, just children and families and people that want to go back home.
Right. And so Israel is saying Hamas is behind the protests, and they're trying to sabotage the idea of the march to kind of like justify their attack against protesters. And to remind you, Hamas is a Palestinian Sunni Islamist fundamentalist organization. Actually, which is interesting because Hamas, their internal security, they called for peaceful protests. And they put out a call that, or like a statement saying to all protesters to avoid friction with the Israeli occupation forces and cooperate with the instructions of the organizers of the events. And they also called on participants to not wear distinctive clothes and to not take photos or use their mobile phones. So they're actually out there trying to keep it chill while Israel's being like, look at this. Basically group of terrorists called Hamas out here causing people to get riled up. And yeah, there are people who are freaking out and running up, but that's not everyone.
No, exactly. And Yusuf Munayir, he's the executive director of the Washington-based U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights. He says that nonviolent protests reveal a very significant weakness for Israelis because they don't know how to handle it. He says the people are not coming at them with weapons, machine guns, or rockets or anything, and the only way Israelis know how to deal with it is how they deal with anything and how they deal with anything they view as a threat, and which is to use force. Multiple human rights groups have condemned Israel for disproportionate use of deadly force. The Israeli government presented no evidence that rock throwing or other violence by some demonstrators seriously threatened the Israeli soldiers on the border fence. This is what the Human Rights Watch was saying after the first protest on March 30th. And after that first protest, that resulted in 14 Palestinian deaths and a number of injuries.
Right. So it's actually reported by Al Jazeera that at the encampments along the border, they have entire families with their children dressed in traditional Palestinian clothes. And they're having picnics. They're sitting on the floor and there's like vendors on the side. And it's this really calm atmosphere right now. It's kind of crazy because you can have people who are like being calm, sitting around each other, interacting. And then if you get a little too close,
they freak the fuck out.
So the UN actually warned Israel to respect the right of peaceful assembly.
Yeah. Amnesty International said the same thing, to respect the rights of Palestinians to peacefully protest. Eric Goldstein, the deputy Middle East director of Human Rights Watch, said that Israel's military should be investigated by the International Criminal Court because he says that Israeli soldiers were apparently acting on orders that all but ensured a bloody military response to Palestinian demonstrators.
Right. And speaking at a press conference, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights spokeswoman Liz Throssell, she said, "We remind Israel of its obligations to ensure that excessive force is not employed against protesters and that in the context of a military occupation, as is the case in Gaza, the unjustified and unlawful resource to firearms by law enforcement resulting in death may amount to willful killing, a grave breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention."
Yep. And Israel, on the other hand, says it has the right to defend its borders and protect its citizens and prevent illegal infiltration. The responsibility for any clashes that may arise thus lies solely with Hamas and the other Palestinian organizations that have manufactured this entire campaign. This is a statement by the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And it's kind of absurd because they say that they're only shooting at protesters that are seen as a threat or shooting at their legs. But they shot a 15-year-old boy in the head, not the legs. They shot to kill, basically. They're shooting to kill children, basically. There's no guns.
That's the problem. They're playing a dangerous game right now. Yeah. Because they have 9 journalists who were covering the protests were hospitalized with serious injuries because Israeli forces shot at them. One of them, Iz Abu Shanab, who's a freelance journalist, she told Al Jazeera she was wearing a jacket, or excuse me, he was wearing a jacket that said press and a helmet, and they still shot at him. And apparently, this is really dark to me, they threw tear gas into a mobile clinic.
What?
So a bunch of like medical staff started to suffocate.
What so the fuck? Like, that's not like, defense.
Don't do that. That's according to Gaza's health ministry, Ashraf Al-Khidra. They were like, they did this, it doesn't make sense. But then they also, at the same time, Israel dropped a bunch of leaflets on the Gaza Strip warning Palestinians not to approach its border fence as a military brace for fresh protests. They were like, do not come here. They said their army is prepared for all scenarios, stay away from the fence, and do not attempt to harm it.
Also,
that's what the leaflet said.
Was the Palestinian photojournalist that you mentioned, Yasser Murtaza, is that the name you said?
No, I said Az Abu Shanab.
Well, this Palestinian photojournalist that died on April 7th, he was shot in the abdomen while covering the protests in the southern Gaza Strip, and he was wearing a vest that had huge letters that said press on it.
Right.
And the Committee to Protect Journalists is demanding that the Israeli Defense Forces investigate his death. So there's a lot of deaths that you can't claim. What's the word? You can't claim that it's in defense of the soldiers when it's clear that photojournalist had no gun, no weapon, no, he wasn't posing a threat to these soldiers.
Right. And then Al Jazeera's Harry Fawcett said that what we have seen over the past 2 Fridays is a great number of people shot by Israeli snipers.
Snipers! Snipers!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so Al Jazeera's Bernard Smith said thousands of Palestinians in attendance were being subjected to a barrage of tear gas from Israeli soldiers. So they're not even, it's not even just people, it's like medical staff. It's yeah. like, just don't do that, because you can never say the medical staff was attacking you.
Yeah.
They were literally probably, oh, I yeah. can't even.
As of April 30th, at least 28 Palestinians have lost limbs to Israeli snipers firing on participants of the Great March. And one of the people that has died is a 15-year-old that was shot in the head on April 27th. And he didn't have any weapons on him. He was just there. And it's so a field researcher, Rania Muhareb, she says that they've not only indicated the names of those killed, but we've also indicated an intention to kill and shoot to kill Palestinian protesters, which may constitute a war crime of willful killing. And there's a lot of videos of interviews of people that are actually there, just to give you an idea of what's going on. But it's not good, and Israel is not owning up to the fact that it's just they keep spouting this idea that like we're protecting the border, and Trump is also obviously the White House is defending Israel, saying they have a right to defend their land. But it's one thing to say you have a right to defend your land, but it's another thing to say you should let them have their peaceful protests. Like, that's all it is.
Right. So Mahjoub Ziwari, I'm probably saying that wrong, a professor at Qatar University, told Al Jazeera that the protests are an outcome of years and years of frustration by the residents of the Gaza Strip. If you look at the past 60 years, there's always been delayed action from the Arab League and the international community with regards to the Palestinian question. And the delay of action is an indication that there's no serious attempt to stop Israel from doing what it is doing now.
Yeah.
So people are tired. They're tired of this. They're tired of being oppressed. They're tired of being told they're not allowed anywhere. They don't belong yeah. there, that they don't get to live in their homes anymore. I mean, just being pushed to that, like the edge.
Mm-hmm. Also, I do want to mention that Israeli army officers claim that most of the killings happen because snipers miss. They say,
what?
According to Haaretz, an unnamed Israeli officer claimed that most of the killings happened because snipers that were aiming at the demonstrators' legs unintentionally killed the protesters because they were bending down, or they missed, or the bullet ricocheted. But this goes against the fact of the evidence, because the evidence collected by human rights investigators claim that the victims were shot in the upper body, including the head and the chest, and some from behind. So there's supposed to be fucking snipers. Like, aren't they supposed to be the best at sniping? Like, saying that they miss is such a cop-out and a disgusting excuse. It's absurd.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's actually crazy to me. I found this very interesting. Asad Abu Sharik, who I mentioned earlier, the spokesperson for the Great March of Return protest movement, they said that the demonstrators were following a path laid out by South Africa during its struggle against apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they said. People are very enthusiastic to come and take part in the protest because they know without participating in this nonviolent form of resistance, they can't achieve their objective, Abu Sharik told Al Jazeera. When asked whether the protest would lead to any tangible concessions by the Israeli, Abu Sharik said, "We're implanting an idea in the minds of people across the world that Palestinians have rights and they hope for the right of return." And that means to their land, obviously.
Yeah.
And then he continues, "We want the world to impose a military embargo on Israel and the BDS, boycott, divestment, sanctions strategy. South Africa used this method and they emerged victorious. And I think we will be no exception." So it's an interesting look into what they're going for.
Yeah.
I hope it works. I don't know. It seems like Israel is so powerful that they can literally just do anything.
Yeah.
That's the unfortunate part. It's like, there's not really,
really
much we can do unless we really start to take every action Israel does that's clearly like not
wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, criminal.
That hurts or kills or ruins lives. Like, unless that's really looked at and taken very seriously, I don't know if much will change, because I feel like
people make exceptions to Israel. That's the problem.
Like, yeah, and it's not fair.
No,
Palestinians are people too.
Yeah,
it's really not
they
fair.
Were there first, sorry to say it, but they were. But there's a really good article on Haaretz. It's an opinion piece written by Torkel Breck, and please read it. It's on, we'll put it on the footnotes. but it basically says, I'm a friend of Israel and I can't accept its indiscriminate violence against Palestinians in Gaza. And it goes into this idea that Israel has friends and enemies, because Netanyahu always talks of, quote, true friends and close friends of Israel. And this writer goes into how Israel is a country that he's engaged with professionally and personally as a journalist. And he goes into how since the end of the march, since the start of the protests at the end of March, he basically goes into the idea that he sees himself for years as a reasonable friend of Israel, but he also doesn't see it as black and white, and he can't just make Israel an exception and buy its dangerous and immoral explanations for all these deaths in Gaza. And he says that the Jewish tradition has a long and advanced tradition of moral reasoning about political life, even though Jews have only a brief experience, 70 years, with being in charge of their own state. So he says that the Israelis' argument is immoral and dangerous because when it's applied to Israelis, because it seems that they're... moral stance is only applied to Palestinians. Is that, if that makes sense? Like they have all these arguments against why they should protect themselves, but this Palestinians are doing the exact same thing and just trying to be home. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good article. I'm trying to summarize it as best as I can, but it's frustrating because Israel claims the protests have acted as a smokescreen for Hamas and other terrorist organizations. They kind of just they don't even recognize the actual civilians that are protesting and the civilians that have wanted to go home for decades. And it undermines the essential principle of discrimination. And it's just such a good article. And it gives you a perspective that isn't just a Palestinian, it isn't just someone that's on the Palestinian side. It's someone that views himself as someone that has seen Israel's point of view. And this is like the red line for him. And it's much of his own research and teaching, he says, as a professor, he reads and hears the Israeli justifications, and recently he's been hearing them with dismay, he says, and that they are unreasonable. So please read this article. It's so, so good. It's good to hear someone's perspective, because we also get listeners that are just like telling us to, I don't know, like have other perspectives on the show or whatever, but it's not... in this situation, there's no justification for Israel's actions. And you can be Israeli, you can be a quote, a friend of Israel, but you can also know when something is inhumane and atrocious.
Yeah, just wrong.
Yeah.
It's just not okay.
Yeah.
And the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayed Raad al-Hussein, agrees. They've condemned Israel's use of excessive force against Palestinian protesters. They say security forces must be held accountable for the many deaths and injuries sustained by Palestinians in the past month. Zayed says, the loss of life is deplorable, and the staggering number of injuries caused by live ammunition only confirms the sense that excessive force has been used against demonstrators, not once, not twice, but repeatedly. And that's a real thing. It's something that's almost ingrained in them, that it's okay to hurt Palestinians because they're this Arab person, and that they're wild and they're animals, and you have to do it because they don't know how to like control themselves. Yeah. And it's like, that's not how it is. That's just what's coming out. That's what you're being told. But it's not true. They're just people who have been pushed to the edge, who are tired. Yeah. They don't want to live this life anymore. They want their home.
And that's interesting that you brought that up, because in the article that I was talking about, he talks about something called the doctrine of purity of arms or morality in modern warfare. And he says this Jewish moral tradition of protecting themselves has been carried on into the life of the IDF, and can be seen in the writings of Shlomo Gorin. He was the first head of the military rabbinate of Israel. And like all modern armies, the IDF has a set of rules for when and how to use lethal force. And the guiding principle of this is the purity of arms. And the principle of discrimination in this purity of arms requires soldiers to make distinctions between legitimate and illegitimate targets. The crucial distinction between combatants and non-combatants is a case to point out, because in this case, Palestinian, it's a gray area, they think it is.
I feel that there's not going to be much change in Israel unless we remove like Netanyahu from power. I struggle with him because he's clearly corrupt. I don't know if he'll never change. So I feel like there's no real change in sight for Israel unless he leaves power.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think
you're right.
Know.
No, I think you're right. And he's been holding on to power for decades. So it's I don't know when he'll let that go. But I wanted to bring up the argument that Israel says about Gaza. He says that Israel says that everything is organized by Hamas, so protesters are seen as Hamas operatives, so therefore everybody is a legitimate target. That's the mentality in the IDF. They see everyone as a potential target because Hamas is their enemy, and anyone that is a Palestinian is an operative of Hamas. But that's using that same idea against Israel is not okay. It's double standard. It's a double standard that's really dangerous and really it's just disgusting, because it allows them to use violence according to their own rules and no one else's. And again, it's unfortunate that people make exceptions to Israel because they're a special state and they have to be protected and everything, but they can also be wrong. So,
yes. And on that note, we'll be right back. All right. We are back.
Back.
I really quick want to read off almost 50 names of people who've died.
Yeah, let's do it.
So Mohammed Naeem Abu Amir, 27, died on March 30th. Amin Mansour Abu Muanwar, 22 years old, died on March 30th. Mohammed Najjar, 25, died on March 30th. Ahmed Ode, 19, died on March 30th. Mahmoud Sadi Rahmi, 33, died on March 30th. Ayad Abdul Al died on March 30th. Abdel Fateh Abdel Nabi, 19, died on March 30th. Jihad Frene, 33, died on March 30th. Ibrahim Abu Shar, 22, died on March 30th. Abdel Qadar Al Hawadri, 42, died on March 30th. Abdel Fattah Bahjat, 18, died on March 30th. Jihad Abu Jamus, 30, died on March 30th. Fares al-Rakab, 29, died on March 30th. Ahmed Omar Arafe, 25, died on March 20th. Badr al-Sabag, 22, died on March 30th. Naj Abu Khujair, 25, died on March 30th. Sari Abu Ode, 30, died on March 30th. Hamdan Abu Amshe, died on March 30th. Shadi Hamdan al-Kashif, 34, died on April 5th, but was sustained injuries on March 30th. Thar Mohammed Rebia, 30, died on March 6th, but sustained injuries on March 30th. Ahmed Nizar Muhareb, 29, died on April 6th. Usama Khamis Kudai, 38, died on March 6th. Maji Ramadan Shabbat, 38, died on April 6th. Hussein Mohammed Mahdi, 16, died on April 6th. Sobi Abu Atwai, 20, died on March 6th. Ibrahim Al-Ir, 20, died on April 6th. Do I keep saying March 6th? Sorry, I mean to say April 6th. Mohammed Said Musa Al-Hajj Saleh, 33, died on April 6th. Allah Zamli, 17, died on April 6th. Sedki Faraj Abu Atawi, 45, died on April 6th. Ala Edin Yahwa Al Zamli, 15, died on April 6th. Hamza Abdel Al, I don't have an age, died on April 6th. Yasser Mutarja, 30, died on April 7th. Marwan Ade Kwadeye, 45, died on April 9th. Muhammad Abu Hajila, 31, died on April 12th. Abdallah Al Sharhi, 28, died on April 12th. Ahmed Abu Akil, 25, died on April 20th. Ahmed Rashad, 24, died on April 20th. Muhammad Ibrahim Ayub, 15, died on April 20th. Saad Abdul Majid Abdul Abu Taha, 29, died on April 20th. Azam Owida, 15, died on April 28th. Anas Abu Asir, died on May 3rd. So that's
just today.
Yeah, that's today. That is not all of them.
Yeah.
There are a few more that I think their names have not been reported to the press yet.
So
that list is on Al Jazeera and it's growing every day. So that was updated this morning with that last name.
Wow.
So those are all the people. So that's a fat list of people.
That's, it's just, you see, you, all the teenagers and young adults and just people that
people
are
of all ages.
Yeah, all ages. It's so disgusting. It's,
oh, yeah.
There's just no words, really.
They're protesting for their rights, and people just
they have a right for their land the same way that people think Israel does. And like that argument of Israel needing a safe haven to be, Israelis needing a safe haven, that same argument can be made for Palestinians. Like they're equal. It's no one's lesser than anyone else. And I think it's so frustrating because people don't see it that way.
And there are people who had to be, who basically were kicked out of their home in 1948, mm-hmm. who to this day live in refugee camps.
Yeah. No, the Onion boy family, the Ayash family, the Onion boy and his dad, they're saying in this article, they were originally displaced from Jaffa during an ethnic cleansing of Palestinians by Zionist militias in 1948, and the family now lives in a camp located in the center of the Gaza Strip. And Muhammad, the 9-year-old, says he wants to go back despite the threat from the Israeli army. He says, "I don't fear them. They fear us. They're scared because they have no land here. They came from a different land and they want to take Jerusalem." That's what a 9-year-old is saying. It's absurd. And amazing at the same time, but it's just terrifying because they've had to grow up so fast. The 9-year-old, by the way, in another note, he has a baby sister now, and they named her after a head Tamimi.
Oh, nice.
So, she's also still in prison, by the way, since being arrested in December 2018 for, 2017. Slapping an Israeli soldier for being on her, for harassing her on her own property.
Right, so one of the main goals of the refugees who want to go back, mm-hmm. is to demonstrate the right of return, which is based on the United Nations Resolution 194, adopted in December 1948. The resolution states that Palestinian refugees wishing to return to their homes and live at peace with their neighbors should be permitted to do so at the earliest practical date. So
they want to live. So they're not trying to kick Israelis out at this point. Like, they know that's not going to happen. They just want to live with them. And at this point,
in peace.
In peace. Yeah, exactly.
And there's no reason they shouldn't be able to. We're all people.
Exactly.
There's nothing really that different about Israelis or Arabs.
No.
We're all humans. We're all people. We're all just, I mean,
yeah.
What's so different about us?
Nothing.
The language we speak, that's about it.
We're not chosen, I guess.
Most Arabs look like Israelis. Most days
we all
Israelis
look
similar. Could be considered to look like Arabs, excuse me. It's just, it's so weird.
It's really, I can't think of another word other than just like human, like it makes me disgusted with humanity that we can be so, that some of us can be so entitled and up our own ass. there was an article on April 4th that has been on my tabs for the longest time, and I haven't gotten the chance to talk about it, but feel like this is a good time. It's called the headline is "Digital Occupation: What's Behind Israel's Social Media in Arabic." Israeli social media accounts in Arabic aim to normalize Israel's occupation and whitewash its image, Palestinians say. So basically, on a lot of there's a Twitter account, Israeli Army Avishi Ardi. He put a message on his Twitter. For his 186,000 followers, he said, "Have a blessed Friday" in Arabic. And sometimes this is accompanied by a Quranic verse or a hadith by the Prophet Muhammad. And every so often his posts turn into just like questions to his Palestinian and Arab followers, like, how would you like to be remembered by people as respected and successful or as troublemaking terrorists? They give other examples of Israeli accounts with using Arabic language, and basically this article is saying that they're using it to whitewash the occupation and make it seem normal. Fida Zayan, an outspoken Palestinian critic of these accounts, say that they have one unified objective, which is to penetrate the ranks of the Arabic-speaking world. By conversing with them in their mother tongue, these Israeli officials are opening communication channels and disseminate lies and propaganda to aim and normalize the Israeli occupation and to whitewash the image of the Zionist entity. She is from Gaza, but she now lives in Berlin, this Palestinian critic. And she says that Israel is portrayed as the only democracy in the Middle East, a progressive, humane state, and the victim of violence and terrorism. And this thus censors a whole history of colonialism, murder, and forced displacement. Because there is a very much one side of the story. You don't hear the other side when it comes to Israel. And, so this is just a really interesting idea of a digital occupation, quote-unquote, because social media is being used for a lot of politicians, ours included, like our president, but seeing that it's also being used by Israeli officials to target young Palestinians or Arabs that are on Twitter or other social medias to kind of normalize what they're doing there, it's kind of just appalling, honestly.
That's but dark.
Yeah, it's super dark because there's so many layers to it, and there's apparently, following the Arab uprisings in 2011, the Arab usage on social media platforms for Israelis have increased, and it represents an alternative to traditional media outlets that are mostly seen as mouthpieces of the Arab regimes. And Zayan continues that it's not a coincidence that the social media accounts of Israeli officials, including the spokesperson for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, also have been using more Arabic because it's again trying to normalize their occupation. Other pages, including Facebook, there's a page called Israel Speaks in Arabic, and it has 1.4 million followers, and it belongs to Israeli embassies in Egypt and Jordan. And according to Zayan, this open communication channel is set up to extract information from Palestinians and other Arabs and intimidate Palestinians from carrying out individual attacks and to vilify any form of Palestinian resistance. There's not only a physical occupation, but a digital one to think about, because for especially those of us that aren't in Palestine or directly affected by the occupation, there's propaganda is started in multiple ways, and the fact that they're using Arabic again to get that across is sickening, and it's deplorable, if I can use that word.
Yeah, social media is a game changer.
Yeah,
when it comes to this kind of stuff, because before it was just like newspapers lying to you. Now it's like anyone and everyone can reach you with a lie in a second.
Yeah.
Oh boy, fucking hell. I hope that was a good info. Graphic turned into a podcast on the Gaza Strip protests.
I think we did a good job. Again, all the links we talk about will be on our footnotes page. So if you want to read the articles we mentioned, which you definitely should, they go into it very much in depth. We kind of just like highlight and
So we're recording this on a Thursday, and like we said, this will go on till May 15th. So tomorrow's Thursday. So protests start back up again tomorrow.
Tomorrow's Friday.
What I meant to say. Tomorrow's Friday. Today is Thursday. So more will happen. So there's an Al Jazeera link I'm going to put in the footnotes that is updates. It updates every time something happens, and it gives more and more info. Every time someone dies, they update that list I read. So, if you want to keep up with everything going on, I recommend checking that out.
And we'll definitely post on our Twitter as well. So even if we're not posting a podcast every day, we're definitely active on Twitter and posting things that matter. So follow us on Ethnically AMB, AMB on Twitter. Keep up with us and stay up to date on the protests that are happening.
And follow us on Instagram at ethnicallyambig, AMBIG. Go check out our website where you can find our footnotes at ethnicallyambiguouspod.com. Sorry, those are my burps.
You got a burp in there. I was impressed.
And review,
five stars, no less. This is a really important issue that's going on right now, so kind of try to like ignore all the bullshit about I feel like so much of American news is just like trying to be a fog or a haze to block you from things that actually matter. Because who fucking cares about Stormy Daniels at this point? Like, I feel like there are other more important things that you should be concerned about, and families and humans and people are being affected in Gaza, and you should know about it. So, yeah, educate people.
Yep. All right. You're my badass.